Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
District of Conservation is sponsored by CFACT. To learn more about our sponsor, head over to CFACT.org. Thank you so much for listening. Welcome to District of Conservation. I am your host, Gabriella Hoffman. This podcast offers a sober examination into all things hunting, fishing, shooting sports, energy, environment, and the public policy surrounding it. And this podcast also specializes in original interviews that you won't hear elsewhere. Here's what I have for you today. Welcome to a special Friday edition of the podcast. I'm delighted to welcome you all every time we release an episode, even on unorthodox days when I'm not posting usually on Mondays or Tuesdays. There is a lot to break down. We have to eventually cover, the collapse of the offshore wind industry and how subsidies are not going to save them. A bunch of other bills that are now being reintroduced or mulled now that the House is back in session with a new speaker. So much to get through, but we're going to first tee things off with my conversation featuring Congressman Glenn G.T. Thompson, who is the current chair of the House Agriculture Committee. He has been in Congress for a very long time. He knows these issues relating to farming, ranching, rural issues, and even commodities, digital assets, is something he's going to talk about. But we talk largely about the farm bill, the place that farmers and ranchers have with respect to conservation practices. We talk about the Conservation Reserve Program and so much more. I'll let the chairman speak for himself. If you were confused or unsure or unfamiliar with agriculture policy, I hope my conversation with the agriculture chairman helps to clarify things or simplify things more, because there's a lot to understand about farming and policy related to it. And I think the chairman does an excellent job of it. So here is my conversation with Congressman G.T. Thompson for you all today. Enjoy. I'm sitting down with Congressman Glenn Thompson, who is chairman of the Agriculture Committee in the House of Representatives. We're going to talk about conservation, agriculture, conservatism, I think, even. But Congressman, thank you so much for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
It's good to be back in Congress with a new speaker. How is that all going, and how do you think Speaker Mike Johnson will do?
It's been great. I will say that our work didn't come to a screeching halt without a speaker. It was just made a little more difficult, a little more complex. Mm-hmm. Lights were kind of out on the House floor, which is always, as the person who's been the number one speaker on the House floor now for probably about 8 years, that's a frustrating experience for me. But at the same time, our committee work has just been going well. Very pleased that we do have a Speaker of the House. Mike Johnson is a good man. He's articulate. He's smart. He has a vision. I love the fact that when he was running for the position, he put out a mission and a vision, and quite frankly, a schedule. And I was thrilled to see that schedule included passing a farm bill off the House floor in December.
I did see that on his schedule, because it is hard to get things across Congress. You have some obstructionists on the other side, unfortunately. And obviously, we'll talk more about the farm bill, making sure that it's not laced with any questionable provisions that would dilute from what its intent is. But could you speak more to your district? Because some people may be familiar with you loosely, but talk about your district and how long you've been representing it.
Well, I've been representing my congressional district now for 15 years. I'm in my eighth term. When I came into Congress, I was 433 out of 435. There were two vacancies down south because of a hurricane, so I was dead last. Today, I'm a senior member. I chair the U.S. House Agriculture Committee, a senior on the Workforce and or Education and Workforce Committee. I had the privilege of representing today. There are 17 members of Congress in Pennsylvania. And I had the privilege of representing a third of the landmass of Pennsylvania.
Wow.
18 counties, a great rural area, Obviously consistent with the state of Pennsylvania, and quite frankly, almost every state in the nation, my number one industry is agriculture. It's a very rural district, as you can imagine. We're home to Pennsylvania's only national forest, the Allegheny National Forest, which quite frankly was an oil and gas field before it became a national forest. And because of the wisdom of my predecessors, it is still an oil and gas field.
Yes.
Show you the consistency of producing energy and still having a just a pristine, beautiful natural resource of what the Allegheny National Forest is. And so I'm blessed. We do have a number of universities, Penn State being the largest within the congressional district, but we have different types of manufacturing as well. My small rural counties, I've got about three of them that are considered to be the world epicenter for powdered metal manufacturing. We have a lot of new technologies that come out of universities like Penn State that develop, entrepreneurs develop great manufacturing opportunities and really solutions to many of the problems that are facing, that people have and that the country's facing. So it's a blessing and honor to be able to represent such a great congressional district.
I think if people have been to your district, they may be familiar with the Marcellus Shale, being in the district and also being home to Pennsylvania's Elk Herd.
Yeah, we, from an energy perspective, starting there, my district includes the original energy boom, which is timber. In fact, a small city that I worked in for 28 years providing health care is Williamsport, which is considered the lumber capital of the world.
Hmm.
The coal that fueled the Industrial Revolution and provided two arsenals of democracy came from my congressional district. So how do I know that? Because I have more abandoned mine sites in my congressional district than the other 434 congressional districts added together.
Wow.
We're proud of that legacy. Mm-hmm. Now, that scar occurred because the federal government told the mine owners not to do any kind of reclamation,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't know how long World War II was going to last or whether there'd be a World War III. And so they needed those armaments to be able to keep our country and the world a free place. And of course, we have today both the Utica Marcellus Shale within the congressional district. We are well blessed when it comes to energy, all the above and all the below. And then, of course, we have great natural landmarks like Pennsylvania's only wild elk herd, which we're really proud of. And quite frankly, probably the most iconic varmint in the world, Punxsutawney Phil.
Yes.
It's a constituent of mine in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania.
And then I'm trying to remember in your district too, I think Ben was reminding me that you are home to Pennsylvania's Grand Canyon.
We are. Tioga County, a beautiful landmark, obviously a geological formation. Much different than the Western Grand Canyon,
right.
Which, you know, the difference between the two, the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon is much smaller, but the textures and the colors this time of year, and even in other times of year with the greens, the pines, the evergreens, we can capture that on a picture where I've always found in my trips to the Western Grand Canyon, it's just hard to capture that grandeur in a photograph. That just breathtaking beauty. But very proud of the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon. We have Pine Creek that runs through the bottom of that. We've got a great rails to trail. Sadly, when they lifted rails, which was sad, we've taken up way too much railroad in this country. But they have replaced it with a beautiful biking path, which is just amazing, where you can go the entire length of the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon.
Wow. Yeah, no, I've heard many wonderful things. I have to check it out at some point. But now let's move into your committee duties in agriculture. Some people may not know what the agriculture chairman does or the committee does. Could you give a refresher and talk also about some of your priorities too?
Yeah, what we deal with the agriculture committee is all things in rural America. A lot of people think about the farm and ranch, and that's an important part of it, right? Supporting the families that provide us with food and fiber, building materials and energy resources. Really, these are the families that help provide national security. because to have national security, you need food security. But this the scope of what we do, it goes well beyond providing that those public-private partnerships like crop insurance, risk management tools for our farm families. It's about rural economic development. It's about rural broadband. Connectivity is an incredibly important part of our mission. It is about, obviously, bridging the digital divide. But it's about rural utilities, too, sewer and water, electricity. You know, the most affordable electricity, certainly in Pennsylvania, is provided by rural electric cooperatives, which are made possible through the Agriculture Committee. It's the most reliable and the most affordable. They have a diverse portfolio of energy sources that they use. It is about research, and that's important because American agriculture can be defined as science, technology, and innovation. It is about, it's about jobs because it is the number one industry in almost every state in the nation, except for perhaps Hawaii.
Right.
Tourism has kind of caught on in Hawaii,
yes.
Though there's still a robust agriculture in Hawaii. It is about economic impact. It's about dollars coming in from other countries in the form of commodity trades. It's a stable agriculture, and what we do in the Agriculture Committee, it's a stabilizing force really for world peace because of programs like Food for Peace, humanitarian programs that really provide access to nutrition. Well, they serve two purposes. Number one, they're a market for our farmers, which is really important. But number two, there's a truism that people with full bellies are less likely to engage in war and terrorism. It is about a better environment because that's American agriculture, our conservation programs and everything we do, modern agriculture practices. And it's about a better climate because there are no greater climate champions in the world than the American farmer, rancher, and forester. You know, there's data out there that shows that combined at this point, what we do in America, those American farmers, I'll use that term broadly, include all the rest, they sequester an average of 6.1 gigatons of carbon annually, which is 10.1% more than what they emit, which means there's
it's
no
negligible.
Climate champion.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're not static, they're dynamic. We're always looking at how we can increase that productivity. But that's all under the scope of the Agriculture Committee. And then something that, quite honestly, that the more I learned about it, the more it made my head hurt, and that is cryptocurrency.
Yes.
The digital assets, once they're traded, are a commodity, and the oversight needs to be with the Commodities Future Trading Corporation, which is an agency, an independent agency, that used to be homed inside the USDA. And that was back in the days. You know, we've been trading commodities since prior to being a country. There are stories about where the farmer that grew the wheat and the baker that needed the wheat met underneath a tree, and they negotiated what really was futures. I'll pay you this much for wheat at this point in the future because I'm going to need it to make my bread. And then that was those commodities. Because of that, there was an agency created within USDA that oversaw wheat and corn and barley and those types of things. And then at some point, somebody really smart figured out, well, you could also trade as a commodity things like oil and gold and other non-agriculture commodities. So at that point, the Commodities Future Trading Corporation was created. And today, there's a lot of folks that are involved in trading digital commodities,
right.
Bitcoin either. And so that's how the Agriculture Committee came to be involved.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
In the digital commodities world.
Yeah, Bitcoin is an interesting realm. And there's debate over how it should be regulated. I lean more towards the Cynthia Lummis position and where she falls onto it. And of course, you have to be careful because now even like China is buying into Bitcoin farms out of Wyoming. It's kind of crazy. They're using the same tactic with maybe something I can ask you right now, actually. Kind of what they're doing to buy U.S. farmland. They're trying to buy other U.S. entities too, even though they're forbidden from engaging in some of these practices. But a big thing before we step into the farm bill is a lot of people on both the right and the left have become increasingly alarmed over China purchasing farmland, although China is not the largest holder yet. But at the rate that they've been acquiring land, it's been alarming. So what is your view and what is your committee doing to perhaps address that?
Well, you know, this falls under the category, another truism, of if you don't pay attention to past history, you risk repeating it. In the 1980s, Japan was buying up our agriculture interests.
Really?
And many states stepped up at that point and put limits on how much foreign entities can purchase. So this is kind of round two. And it's interesting that a lot of people don't pay attention to history. Now, I don't think Japan was doing that to set up strategic locations to spy on military installations. And Japan was an island nation, and they needed to have access to food for their citizens. China is not an island nation, but they're huge. They have more stomachs than almost anybody other than India at this point, and they have a lot of bellies to fill. At the same time, they have some very devious motivations. And so we can learn lessons from the past. We already have limitations in most states. I know the state of Pennsylvania has one, South Dakota. I've talked with Governor Noem. She's a friend of mine. We served together in the House. And
Governor Youngkin just passed something earlier this year.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I think most of these states already had pre-existing limitations. Now, some of them were tightening them up, which is appropriate. I'm currently... I've initiated, as the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, an investigation into this issue. And we have, I believe that one of the government agencies, maybe the government accounting agency, is doing a study to look at what the realities are. Because sometimes, believe this or not, we do things emotionally in Washington.
No.
Yeah. And I like to be factual. I like to be driven by the facts and data. And so we're waiting for a study. Hopefully we'll get it soon. Of exactly what foreign entities are buying what interests. And that's both production and process. Mm-hmm. Because at a certain point, we would reach a critical mass level point where it would put us in a position of food insecurity.
Right.
If we don't own, if Americans don't own and control those basically food businesses, agribusinesses, whether it's a farm or whether it's a processing site. So that's where we're at with it. I am not one that wanted to jump emotionally to solutions. I think you have to do a root cause analysis and determine what the facts are so that we can do the right kinds of things. I do believe in my heart that one of the outcomes that we will see is an issue that's led by one of my senior members on the committee, and that is making sure that we add the Secretary of Agriculture to the CFIUS committee, because there's already a standing inter-department committee that reviews the sale of any strategic American assets to foreign entities, and what risk is that to national security? I put food security at the top of the list, although it's never been there. I know there's some pushback and resistance to that, perhaps from the department. You know that maybe they only want to be there when they have to be there, but I think it's important that the secretary or his or her designee has a seat at the table on the CFIUS committee, and that we are reviewing any purchase of by a foreign entity of an agriculture-specific business.
Another maybe concern you may be aware of, and obviously you don't need to have a legislative solution, and I'm not asking about a legislative solution here, but I've become increasingly alarmed with what is known as like corporate farming operations or institutional farming arrangements, where they're trying to divorce farmers from land ownership. Have you heard about that at all, about some of these bigger conglomerates coming in and divorcing farmers and ranchers?
I mean, it's a model that we need to look at. I'm not necessarily opposed to larger farms. I support farms of all sizes and all organizations. I'll be honest with you, the majority of corporate farms are family farms that have incorporated to protect their personal assets. that we live in such a lawsuit prevalent time, and so I don't blame families from protecting their personal assets by incorporating. Mm-hmm. And so there's a bit of a misnomer that all these corporations are such a bad thing. Quite frankly, if it protects families and allow families to continue to farm, that's a good thing. I do think it's an issue where you have
like financial asset managers,
companies that coming in and they purchase. Now, if they're purchasing and they're producing, if they're running an efficient operation and they're helping with food security and they're creating jobs and they're contributing to the economy, and their practices are helping with a better environment and a better climate, and they're helping to generate trade dollars from commodities being purchased, how do we complain about that? Now, there is some points of discussion on that, though, in terms of different programs that we have. It should be those who are actually, I believe, working the land. Mm-hmm. So it's the farm managers, farm workers that perhaps it would be the beneficiary of some of the programs that we have out there versus an absentee landowner. Mm-hmm. I think that is worthy of debate and discussion at that point.
Let's talk about the Farm Bill. I know that's one of your big priorities, and it's every 5 years comes up to the table. Right. And now with obviously things settling back in Congress, I think there's a timetable to vote, possibly pass a...
out of the House in mm-hmm. December.
Yes.
Of the... Speaker Johnson has made that very clear as a part of his plan, and I love it.
Yes. And talk about how you're going to try to keep the integrity of the Farm Bill to have it be properly stewarded so it does go to the programs, promotes conservation, because what I see your colleagues on the other side doing is trying to insert these kind of non sequitur or irrelevant or maybe politically charged or very climate alarmist provisions to kind of keep away from the purpose.
Hey, I'm the chairman of the committee. I'm not going to allow that to happen.
Of course, right.
But I'm bringing everybody to the table. That's my style. I get a lot of very positive feedback from members on both sides of the aisle in terms of how I'm managing this process. And that happened as late as 2 hours ago on the House floor. Where a colleague of mine that serves on the committee, a great member, Democrat, had some very kind things to say about how, in his words, I was threading the needle. But I do that by bringing people to the table, by building ownership. But this will be a farm bill that will be bipartisan, bicameral, and highly effective. And we do that by making the bill tripartisan. So let me explain tripartisanship, my version of it. That is Republicans, Democrats, and the American people. And that is why in the past 2 years and 10 months, I have traveled, I'll hit my 38th state a week from Monday in Oklahoma. And that doesn't count the one territory, Puerto Rico, where I've done listening sessions. And that doesn't include what we've done in hearings here. Mm-hmm. I've been in some states multiple times, well over 80 listening opportunities in the past 2 years and 10 months. And my staff who keeps track, because when I do go to a listening session, we tend to go and visit farms and ranches and processors. And I'm told that's been over 180 of those sites.
Wow.
Cumulatively as a part of that. That's how you make things tripartisan. You mm-hmm. bring the voices of American agriculture and rural communities to the table. And that's how we've been writing this farm bill. And this is why I feel very confident about where we're at in the process. Now, we're socializing pay force. Because there are great ideas that are bipartisan that members of both sides of the aisle and collectively have submitted. But unless we can find new dollars, I can't make any of those great ideas a reality. And so now we're trying to work in a bipartisan way to figure out how do we, there's no new dollars. So we got to figure out how, with the existing, what's spent in Washington, how do we fund those? And that's exactly where I thought we would be at this process, we'll say a month and a half, 2 months out from the floor, we're starting to socialize the pay-for process here. So I'm really optimistic about this, of where we're at, and very grateful for the teamwork of, members on both sides of the aisle have done. And not just committee members. We opened a portal up to every member in the House. To be able to submit their priorities and their ideas. I've done a lot of member education. We're going to continue to do that, so I'm very optimistic about where we're at. The Senate can't really address. I don't know. I mean, I have high respect for Senator Stabenow. John Bozeman's one of my best friends. I think they've been leaning into this and doing good work. The Senate will do what the Senate does in the time frame that the Senate wants to. But I'm thrilled to have a speaker that supports me to give us, that will provide us floor time, you know, prior to the end of the calendar year.
I think a lot of people have mixed opinions about the farm bill. Some people have concerns about, you know, where the money goes, and some people may be questioning of things. But I think one of the best aspects of it, even despite, you know, criticisms you hear, the conservation programs. Could you speak to some of the conservation programs? Because they really do empower landowners.
Yeah, they empower our farmers and ranchers in a significant way. It helps them deal with just a difficult regulatory environment. It allows them to achieve compliance in a smart way. And our conservation programs are successful because they are locally led and voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
There have been more, just one example of an outcome, there have been more endangered and threatened species delisted through USDA Farm Bill provided voluntary and locally led conservation programs than the Fish and Wildlife could ever hope to achieve. It helps them financially because these conservation programs largely help with soil health. And if you achieve better soil health, you increase productivity. You increase productivity, you increase profitability.
Mm-hmm.
And so the conservation programs are very effective tools, very proud of them. I chaired the subcommittee that led on conservation, actually conservation and forestry, for 6 years. And so I've immersed myself into those programs. They are great public-private partnerships because where we have invested and empowered these conservation programs, we normally have nonprofits and even private sector companies, organizations that step to the table and invest them in as well.
To those who say that ranchers and farmers are an impediment to environmental stewardship, true conservation, what do you have to say to those people?
Ignorance is bliss, because that's just not true. You know, the facts and the science are completely to the contrary. I mean, one of the biggest targets lately has been the livestock industry.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow the methane, just like you and I express when we breathe, is hard on the environment. That livestock, when they're grazing, when they're in pastures, when they're in paddocks, they're stimulating root growth through basically what they release. And quite frankly, those hooves, they're constantly working as they move around. And so, I shared with you a statistic already in terms, and that is crops, livestock, and trees are what contribute to sequestering 6.1 gigatons of carbon annually, 10.1% more than what they release. And I am absolutely convinced with the right farm bill, we can help grow that margin. So I just encourage folks not to jump on the political correct bandwagon. And just because you hear it or read it on social media doesn't mean it's true. Agriculture is science. And science, technology, and innovation. I'm very proud to be a part of America's number one industry. It's not just about feeding us. It's about making sure we have a better environment and cleaner climate.
That's true. And something you could take away, Florida cowboys and ranchers told me cows keep Florida green, or you could say any insert state here, but cows do keep the environment green. So Congressman Thompson, Chairman Thompson, thank you so much
for the interview. Thank you. What a privilege to be able to talk with you.
Thanks for listening to District of Conservation. If you enjoyed what you heard today, go leave us some reviews on Apple and Spotify or wherever podcasts are played. Your feedback will help us reach more people, and I love to know what is on your mind after each episode. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to never miss a beat or a guest announcement, because that is our way of updating all of you listeners, and we have just hit 1,000 followers on Instagram for the podcast account. Thank you very much. And if you have any guest suggestions or topics you want to hear on the show, I'm all ears. I would love to hear your feedback there. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for the next episode.